The mayor of Locre coughed behind his hand.
"A proper coronation will take some time to arrange," he began. "But we would like..."
"No," said Tom John. The mayor hesitated.
"Pardon?"
he said. "I won't accept it." The mayor hesitated again. His lips moved and his eyes glazed slightly. He felt that he had got lost somewhere and decided it would be best to start again.
Proper coronation will take...
he ventured.
"It won't," said Tom John. "I will not be king."
The mayor was mouthing like a carp.
"Howell,"
said Tom John desperately,
"you're good with words."
"The problem we've got here," said the dwarf, "is that no is apparently not among the options when you're offered a crown. I think he could cope with maybe."
Tom John stood up and grabbed the crown. He held it above his head like a tambourine.
"Listen to me, all of you," he said. "I thank you for your offer. It is a great honour, but I can't accept it. I've worn more crowns than you can count, and the only kingdom I know how to rule has got curtains in front of it. I'm sorry."
Dead silence greeted this. They did not appear to have been the right words.
"Another problem," said Howell conversationally, "is that you don't actually have a choice. You are the king, you see. It's a job you're lined up for when you are born."
"I'd be no good at it."
"That doesn't matter. A king isn't something you're good at. It's something you are."
"You can't leave me here. There's nothing but forests."
Tom John felt the suffocating cold sensation again and the slow buzzing in his ears. For a moment, he thought he saw, faint as a mist, a tall, sad man in front of him, stretching out a hand in supplication.
"I'm sorry," he whispered. "I really am."
Through the fading shape, he saw the witches watching him intently. Beside him, Howell said,
"The only chance you'd have is if there was another heir. But you don't remember any brothers and sisters, do you?"
"I don't remember anyone. Howell, I..."
There was another ferocious argument among the witches, and then McGrath was striding across the hall, moving like a tidal wave, moving like a rush of blood to the head, shaking off Granny Weatherwax's restraining hand, bearing down on the throne like a piston, and dragging the fool behind her.
"I say... Hello-y? I say, excuse me, can anyone hear us?"
The castle up above was full of hubbub and general rejoicing, and there was no one to hear the polite and frantic voices that echoed among the dungeon passages, getting politer and more frantic with each passing hour.
"I say, excuse me, Billum's got this terrible thing about rats, if you don't mind. Cooey!"
Let the camera of the mind's eye pan slowly back along the dim, ancient corridors, taking in the dripping fungi, the rusting chains, the damp, the shadows.
"Can't anyone hear us? Look, this is really too much. There's been some laughable mistake. Look, the wig's come right off."
Let the plaintive echoes dwindle among the cobwebbed corners, the rodent-hunted tunnels, until there are no more than a reedy whisper on the cusp of hearing.
I say, excuse me! Help!"
Someone is bound to come down here again one of these days. Sometime afterwards, McGrath asked Howell if he believed in long engagements. The dwarf paused in the task of loading up the latte, at least of supervising the loading. Actual physical assistance was a little difficult because he had, the day before, slipped on something and broken his leg.
"About a week maximum," he said at last. With matinees, of course.
A month went past. The early, damp earth odours of autumn drifted over the velvety dark moors, where the watery starlight was echoed by one spark of fire. The standing stone was back in its normal place, but still poised to run if any auditors came into view. The witches sat in careful silence. This was not going to rate among the 100 most exciting coven meetings of all time. If Mussorgsky had seen them, the night on the Bear Mountain would have been over by tea-time. Then Granny Weatherwax said,
"It was a good banquet, I thought." "I was nearly sick," said Nanny Ogg proudly, "and my Shirl helped out in the kitchen and brought me home some scraps."
"I heard," said Granny coldly. "Half a pig and 3 bottles of fizzy wine went missing, they say."
"It's nice that some people think of the old folk," said Nanny Ogg, completely unabashed. "I got a coronation mug, too." She produced it. "It says, Viva Verenz the Second Rex." "Fancy him being called Rex. I can't say it's a good likeness, mind you. I don't recall him having a handle sticking out of his ear."
There was another long, terribly polite pause. Then Granny said,
"We were a bit surprised you weren't there, McGrath. We thought you'd be up at the top table kind of thing," said Nanny. "We thought you'd have moved in up there."
McGrath stared fixedly at her feet. "I wasn't invited," she said meekly.
"Well, I don't know about invited," said Granny. "We weren't invited. People don't have to invite witches. They just know we'll turn up if we want to. They soon find room for us," he added, with some satisfaction.
"You see, he's been very busy," said McGrath to her feet. "Sorting everything out, you know. He's very clever, you know, underneath."
"Very sober lad," said Nanny.
"Anyway, it's full moon," said McGrath quickly. "You've got to go to coven meetings at full moon, no matter what other pressing engagements there may be."
"Have you?"
Nanny Ogg began, but Granny nudged her sharply in the ribs.
"It's a very good thing he's paying so much attention to getting the kingdom working again," said Granny soothingly. "It shows proper consideration. I dare say he'll get around to everything sooner or later. It's very demanding being a king."
"Yes," said McGrath, her voice barely audible. The silence that followed was almost solid. It was broken by Nanny in a voice as bright and brittle as ice.
"Well, I brought a bottle of that fizzy wine with me," she said. In case we felt like a drink," she rallied, and waved it at the other two.
"I don't want any," said McGrath sullenly.
"You drink up, girl," said Granny Weatherwax. "It's a chilly night. It'd be good for your chest."
She squinted at McGrath as the moon drifted out from behind its cloud.
"Here," she said. "Your hair looks a bit grubby. It looks as though you haven't washed it for a month."
McGrath burst into tears. The same moon shone down on the otherwise unremarkable town of Ram Nitz, some 90 miles from Loncra. Tom John left the stage to thunderous applause at the concluding act of The Troll of Ankh. 100 people would go home tonight, wondering whether trolls were really as bad as they had hitherto thought, although, of course, this wouldn't actually stop them disliking them in any way whatsoever. Howell patted him on the back as he sat down at the makeup table and started scraping off the thick grey sludge that was intended to make him look like a walking rock.
"Well done," he said. "That love scene, just right. And when you turned around and roared at the wizard, I shouldn't think there was a dry seat in the house."
"I know." Howell rubbed his hands together.
"We can afford a tavern tonight," he said. "So if we just
"'Well, sleep in the carts,' said Tom John firmly, squinting at himself in the shard of mirror.
"'But you know how much the king gave us. "'It could be feather beds all the way home.'
"'It's straw mattresses and a good profit for us,' said Tom John. "'And that'll buy you gods from heaven and demons from hell, "'and the wind and the waves, and more trapdoors than you can count, my lawn ornament.' Howell's hand rested on Tom John's shoulder for a moment. Then he said,
"'You're right, boss.'
"'Certainly I am. How's the play going?'
"'Huh? What play?'
said Howell innocently. Tom John carefully removed a plaster brow ridge. "'You know,' he said, "'that one, the Lonkra King.'
"'Oh, coming along. Coming along, you know. I'll get it right one of these days.'
Howell changed the subject with speed.
"'You know, we could work our way down the river and take a boat home. That would be nice, wouldn't it?'
"'But we could work our way home, overland, and pick up some more cash. That would be better, wouldn't it?' Tom John grinned. "'We took 103 tonight. I counted heads during the judgment speech. That's nearly one silver piece after expenses.'
"'You're your father's son, and no mistake,' said Howell.
Tom John sat back and looked at himself in the mirror. "'Yes,' he said. "'I thought I'd better be.' McGrath didn't like cats and hated the idea of mouse traps. She'd always felt that it should be possible to come to some sort of arrangement with creatures like mice so that all available food was rationed in the best interests of all parties. This was a very humanitarian outlook, which is to say that it was not a view shared by mice, and therefore her moonlit kitchen was alive. When there was a knocking at the door, the entire floor appeared to rush towards the walls. After a few seconds, the knocking came again. There was another pause. Then the knocking rattled the door on its hinges, and a voice cried,
"Open in the name of the king!"
A second voice said in hurt tones, "You don't have to shout like that. Why did you shout like that? I didn't order you to shout like that. It's enough to frighten anybody shouting like that."
"Sorry, sire. It goes with the job, sire."
"Just knock again a bit more gently, please." The knocking might have been a bit softer. McGrath's apron dropped off its hook on the back of the door. "You sure I can't do it myself?"
"It's not done, sire. King's knocking at humble cottage doors. Best leave it to me." "Open in the..."
"Sergeant!"
"Sorry, sire. Forgot myself."
"Try the latch." There was the sound of someone being extremely hesitant.
"Don't like the sound of that, sire," said the invisible sergeant. "Could be dangerous. If you want my advice, sire, I'd set fire to the thatch."
"Set fire?"
"Yes, sir. We always do that if they don't answer the door. Brings them out a treat."
"I don't think that would be appropriate, sergeant. I think I'll try the latch if it's all the same to you."
"Breaks my heart to see you do it, sir."
"Well, I'm sorry."
"You could at least let me buff it up for you."
"No."
"Well, couldn't I just set fire to the privy?"
"Absolutely not."
"That chicken house over there looks as if it could go up like a..." "Sergeant!" "Sir?"
"Go back to the castle."
"What? Leave you all alone, sir?"
"This is a matter of extreme delicacy, sergeant. I'm sure you are a man of sterling qualities, but there are times when even a king needs to be alone. It concerns a young woman, you understand."
"Ah, point taken, sire."
"Thank you. Help me dismount, please."
"Sorry about all that, sire. Taps on me."
"Don't mention it."
"If you need any help getting her alight..."
"Please, go back to the castle, sergeant."
"Yes, sire. If you're sure, sire. Thank you, sire."
"Sergeant..."
"Yes, sir."
"I shall need someone to take my cap and bells back to the Fool's Guild in Arnc Morpork. Now I'm leaving. It seems to me you're the ideal man."
Thank you, sir. Much obliged.
It's your...
Ah, burning desire to be of service.
Yes, sir?
Make sure they put you up in one of the guest rooms.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
There was the sound of a horse trotting away. A few seconds later, the latch clonked, and the fool crept in. It takes considerable courage to enter a witch's kitchen in the dark, but probably no more than it takes to wear a purple shirt with velvet sleeves and scalloped edges. It had this in its favour, though. There were no bells on it. He had bought a bottle of sparkling wine and a bouquet of flowers, both of which had gone flat during the journey. He laid them on the table and sat down by the embers of the fire. He rubbed his eyes. It had been a long day. He wasn't, he felt, a good king, but he'd had a lifetime of working hard at being something he wasn't cut out to be, and he was persevering. As far as he could see, none of his predecessors had tried at all. So much to do, so much to repair, so much to organize. On top of it all, there was the problem with the Duchess. Somehow, he'd felt moved to put her in a decent cell, in an airy tower. She was a widow, after all. He felt he ought to be kind to widows. But being kind to the Duchess didn't seem to achieve much. She didn't understand it. She thought it was just weakness. He was dreadfully afraid that he might have to have her head cut off. No, being a king was no laughing matter. He brightened up at the thought. There was that to be said about it. And after a while, he fell asleep. The Duchess was not asleep. She was currently halfway down the castle wall on a rope of knotted sheets, having spent the previous day gradually chipping away the mortar around the bars of her window, although, in truth, you could hack your way out of the average Loughborough castle wall with a piece of cheese. The fool! He'd given her cutlery and plenty of bedclothes. That was how these people reacted. They let their fear do their thinking for them. They were scared of her. Even when they thought they had her in their power, and the weak never had the strong in their power, never truly in their power. If she'd thrown herself in prison, she would have found considerable satisfaction in making herself regret she'd ever been born. But they'd just given her blankets and worried about her.
Well, she'd be back.
There was a big world out there, and she knew how to pull the levers that made people do what she wanted. She wouldn't burden herself with a husband this time, either.
Weak? He was the worst of them. No courage in him to be as bad as he knew he was, inside.
She landed heavily on the moss, paused to catch her breath, and then, with the knife ready in her hand, slipped away along the castle walls and into the forest. She'd go all the way down to the far border and swim the river there, or maybe build a raft. By morning, she'd be too far away for them ever to find her, and she doubted very much that they'd ever come looking.
Weak!
She moved through the forest with surprising speed. There were tracks, after all, wide enough for carts, and she had a pretty good sense of direction.
Besides, all she needed to do was go downhill. If she found the gorge, then she just had to follow the flow.
And then there seemed to be too many trees. There was still a track, and it went more or less in the right direction, but the trees on either side of it were planted rather more thickly than one might expect. And when she tried to turn back, there was no track at all behind her. She took to turning suddenly, half expecting to see the trees moving. But they were always standing stoically and firmly rooted in the moss. She couldn't feel a wind, but there was a sighing in the treetops.
All right, she said under her breath. All right, I'm going anyway. I want to go, but I will be back.
It was at this point that the track opened out into a clearing that hadn't been there the day before and wouldn't be there tomorrow. A clearing in which the moonlight glittered off assembled antlers. and fangs and serried ranks of glowing eyes. The weak, banded together, can be pretty despicable. But it dawned on the Duchess that an alliance of the strong can be more of an immediate problem. There was total silence for a few seconds, broken only by faint panting, and then the Duchess grinned, raised her knife, and charged at the lot of them. The front ranks of the massed creatures opened to let her pass, and then closed in again, even the rabbits. The kingdom exhaled. On the moors, under the very shadow of the peaks, the mighty nocturnal chorus of nature had fallen silent. The crickets had ceased their chirping, the owls had hooted themselves into silence, and the wolves had other matters to attend to. There was a song that echoed and boomed from cliff to cliff, and resounded up the high hidden valleys, causing miniature avalanches. It funneled along the secret tunnels under glaciers, losing all meaning as it rang between the walls of ice. To find out what was actually being sung, you would have to go all the way back down to the dying fire by the standing stone, where the cross resonances and waves of conflicting echoes focused on a small elderly woman who was waving an empty bottle.
With a snail, if you slow to a crawl, but the hedgehog. It tastes better at the bottom of the bottle, doesn't it?
McGrat said, trying to drown out the chorus.
That's right, said Granny, draining her cup. Is there any more? I think Geister's finished it by the sound of it.
They sat on the fragrant heather and stared up at the moon.
Well, we've got a king, said Granny, and there's an end of it. It's thanks to you and Nanny, really, said McGrat, and hiccuped. Why? None of them would have believed me if you hadn't spoken up.
Only because we was asked, said Granny.
Yes, but everyone knows witches don't lie. That's the important thing. I mean, everyone could see they looked so alike. But that could have been coincidence. You see,
McGrat blushed.
I looked up Droit de Seigneur. Goody Whimper had a dictionary.
Nanny Ogg stopped singing.
Yes,
said Granny Weatherwax.
Well?
McGrat became aware of an uncomfortable atmosphere.
You did tell the truth, didn't you? She said. They really are brothers, aren't they?
Oh, yes, said Geither Ogg. Definitely. I saw to his mother when the new king was born, and to the queen when young Tom John was born, and she told me who the father was. Geither?
Sorry.
The wine was going to her head, but the wheels in McGrath's mind still managed to turn.
Just a minute, she said.
I remember the fool's father, said Nanny Ogg,
speaking slowly and deliberately.
Very personable young man he was. He didn't get on with his dad, you know, but he used to visit sometimes to see old friends.
He made friends easily, said Granny.
Among the ladies, agreed Nanny. Very athletic, wasn't he? Could climb walls like nobody's business, I remember hearing.
He was very popular at court, said Granny. I know that much.
Oh, yes, with the queen at any rate.
The king used to go out hunting such a lot, said Granny. It was that dwarf of his, said Nanny. Always out and about with it he was. Hardly ever home a night.
Just a minute,
McGrat repeated. They looked at her.
Yes,
said Granny.
You told everyone
they were brothers, and that Verence was the older.
That's right.
And you let everyone believe that...
Granny Weatherwax pulled her shawl around her.
We're bound to be truthful, she said. But there's no call to be honest.
No, no. What you're saying is that the King of Loncra isn't really...
What I'm saying is,
said Granny firmly,
that we've got a king who is no worse than most, and better than many, and who's got his head screwed on right. Even if it is against the thread,
said Nanny.
And the old king's ghost has been laid to rest happy. There's been an enjoyable coronation. And some of us got mugs we weren't entitled to. Them being only for the kiddies, and all in all, things are a lot more satisfactory than they might be. That's what I'm saying. Never mind what should be, or what might be, or what ought to be. It's what things are that's important.
But he's not really a king.
He might be, said Nanny.
But you just said...
Who knows? The late queen wasn't very good at counting. Anyway, he doesn't know he isn't royalty. And you're not going to tell him, are you?
Said Granny Weatherwax. McGrath stared at the moon, which had a few clouds across it.
No,
she said.
Right then, said Granny. Anyway, look at it like this. Royalty has to start somewhere, and might as well start with him. It looks as though he means to take it seriously, which is a lot further than most of them take it. He'll do.
McGrath knew she had lost. You always lost against Granny Weatherwax. The only interest was in seeing exactly how.
But I'm surprised at the two of you. I really am,
she said.
You're witches. That means you have to care about things like truth and tradition and destiny, don't you? That's where you've been getting it all wrong, said Granny.
Destiny is important, see? But people go wrong when they think it controls them. It's the other way around. Bugger destiny,
agreed Nanny. Granny glared at her.
After all, you never thought being a witch was going to be easy, did you?
I'm learning,
said McGrath. She looked across the moor, where a thin rind of dawn glowed on the horizon.
I think I'd better be off, she said. It's getting early.
Me too, said Nanny Ogg. Oh, she'll fret if I'm not home when she comes to get my breakfast.
Granny carefully scuffed over the remains of the fire.
When shall we three meet again? She said.
The witches looked at one another sheepishly.
I'm a bit busy next month, said Nanny. Birthdays and such. And the work has really been piling up with all this hurly-burly, you know. And there's all the ghosts to think about. I thought you sent them back to the castle, said Granny. Well, they didn't want to go, said Nanny vaguely. To be honest, I've got used to them around the place. They're company of an evening. They hardly scream at all now.
That's nice, said Granny.
What about you, McGrath?
There always seems to be such a lot to do at this time of year, don't you find?
Said McGrath.
Quite, said Granny Weatherwax pleasantly. It's no good getting yourself tied down to appointments all the time, is it?
Let's just leave the whole question open, shall we?
They nodded. And as the new day wound across the landscape, each one busy with her own thoughts, each one a witch alone, they went home. There is a school of thought that says that witches and wizards can never go home. They went, though, just the same.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.